Welcome, everyone, to In the Loop. What is up, everybody? My name is Michael Burpo. Thanks again for listening to In the Loop. This week, I'm joined by Joel from the Smithy Group, as well as Stuart from Punchmark, and we're talking all about the buy funnel. And actually, three different buy funnels to be precise. We got the pre-purchase, mid-purchase, and post-purchase. And it's kind of three different funnels that all sort of feed into each other. And we talk about the different techniques and tools that go along with each one, how you can capitalize on each and really drive your overall conversion rate as high as it can, and a couple of useful tips along the way. It's a really fun talk. I think you'll enjoy it. Thanks again to Punchmark and the Smithy Group for making this whole thing happen, and ClientBook for sponsoring this week's episode. Cheers. We'll be back next week, Tuesday, with another episode. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Punchmark, the jewelry industry's favorite website platform. Whether you're looking for better e-commerce performance, business growth, or campaigns that drive traffic and sales, Punchmark's website and marketing services were made just for you. It's never too late to transform your business with a user-friendly, point-of-sale integrated website platform designed for growth and results. Sign up for your free trial demo at punchmark.com.
This episode is brought to you by The Smithy Group, a digital growth agency that helps leaders and businesses dream bigger and achieve multi-generational integrity. Through insights and intelligence, digital marketing, and advertising solutions, we help businesses expand their reach, grow their revenue, and make an impact. TSG has helped hundreds of businesses surpass their goals and believe that whatever your business, whatever your story, we will make it matter to your audience.
And now, back to the show. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Michael Burpo. I'm joined by Stuart Blessman and Joel Beaker as well from the Smithy Group. Joel, first time I think you've been on the podcast. Really exciting.
Yeah, this is my second time, actually.
Second time.
I'm glad to be back. Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. Stuart, I think you were on, we'll see when this airs. I think it will be the episode before this one. So really excited to have you back as well. We're going to be talking all about the term as from B to C. So kind of that's a tongue-in-cheek way of saying the shopping experience in what we might call a buy funnel for different shoppers. So this can take place for both your brick and mortar store, so the physical location. So we are typically talking about jewelers. So this is your brick and mortar location that allows you to sell one-to-one, as well as your online presence. So this is your website or also your Facebook product marketing and things along those lines. So I kind of want to split this down into three different sections, which I think kind of put it into three big funnels, but they all are kind of part of one big funnel. So the first one is what we might call pre-purchase. Maybe Stuart, do you mind starting us off with like in defining the pre-purchase marketing efforts and some of the key techniques inside of it?
Sure thing. So a pre-purchase marketing effort would be all the activities you can do to let people know that your brick and mortar exists, that you carry a number of brands, number of products, and all the activities associated with enticing them to come to you, to connect with you, or build that brand and their relationship. There's a number of things that could go into that, whether it's the SEO that is on your website, the social media that you're posting regularly, the television or YouTube advertising you're doing in your local market. Really, any and every activity that's outside of your brick and mortar that's meant to be seen by the widest variety of people out there to bring them back to you.
Joel, anything you want to add about that? I've seen some really creative ways that people have marketed pre-purchase, or even, I guess, it kind of almost loops in with post-purchase as well, starts to blend in if the purchasing periods are kind of either really far apart or kind of can blend together. What are your experiences with pre-purchase?
Yeah, the only thing I would really add to that, which we do a lot of here at TSG, is kind of the paid side of it. So paid social, paid pay-per-click on Google, and really that omni-channel approach, right? That pre-sales, getting people to your website, hitting them at all different angles. They're on different platforms, right? And it's a matter of reaching them and letting them know that your business is there and what you do. So you ultimately get them to site, which then obviously you can take next steps after that.
I've seen some really cool pre-purchase marketing, especially from people are probably sick of me talking about it, but I love sneakers. And I think sneakers marketing around sneakers is the quintessential luxury marketing because at its basis, you only can wear one pair of shoes on your feet at a time. As soon as you own a pair of shoes, you really don't need anymore. And when it comes to these sneakers, they're way more expensive than they actually need to be. But what they do is they want you to be thinking and allured by the idea of these sneakers. And so they send a lot of lookbooks and what's hot and all these, what I might call soft categories, like things that are not defined by the actual product, but more around the feeling of the luxury. So like what's hot, what's in season, you know, discontinued, things along those nature that are kind of made up categories. And it definitely works for me, man. I get sucked in real bad every now and then.
And the classic drop when you're like anticipating, oh, coming out this Friday, new pair of sneakers I really want, builds up that hype.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Man, the idea of drops, it's one of those things I wonder if we'll ever see added into the jewelry kind of ecosystem. It works so well in things along the lines of, first of all, PC parts, but also in, you know, fashion. So we got shoes, but we also have luxury bags, and even, you know, Supreme was the one who kind of really started that hype. And that does kind of bring up a great point about, like, you know, the pre-purchase kind of period and how they're building up the hype, and then it's going to sell out in 5 minutes, and then, oh, I missed it. But then, you know, it drives up the price.
Yep. A lot of wearable brands do a really good job with that. You know, Rolex, no, these watch manufacturers, they have new products coming out and they really want to bring the hype up. What I've also seen happening too a lot more lately is a lot of the shows in the jewelry industry, like JCK, they're really starting to prime the pump more for the retailers, getting them to come in, but they're providing amazing content and some amazing value in that content that the retail stores could use to hype up their own customer list too. Hey, we're going to this show. We're going to be buying this. Are you interested in booking an appointment or purchasing it early?
Yeah. So that's the pre-purchase experience. So again, a lot of different parts. It's kind of just staying top of mind. It's building up the relationship with the purchaser without any kind of contractual obligations. It's very like the honeymoon period. And then it gets down to the brass tacks. Now we're talking about the actual, you know, on-site or purchasing period. So this is like they are shopping. Joel, what do you see when it comes down to the actual active shopper? What techniques are you guys trying to employ to either bump up the conversion rate or make it so that they're as successful as possible?
Yeah, definitely the user's journey, right? And understanding that. I would say it starts with defining that conversion value, whatever that may be, right? Sometimes it's not always purchases. Maybe you want to drive in-store traffic and you're really trying to get that book and appointment form. So really defining what that conversion value is. And then from there, setting up the right tracking to be able to figure out, one, you know, that user's journey, and then two, if there's a drop-off point within that journey. So really having that in place really will help you make decisions moving forward, because maybe there's a part on your website that people are dropping off at that you really need to look at. Maybe enhance the copy, enhance the creative, enhance the call to action to really get people to convert. And then even from, you're obviously going to have a bounce rate, right? People are going to get to your website, bounce off. That's really where the remarketing comes into play, right? You want to keep your business top of mind for these consumers, even after they've left your website. Again, back to that omni-channel approach through Facebook, through Google, we can continue to serve ads to these people for 30, 60 days after they've already visited your website. So maybe they don't make a purchase right away there. They don't convert right away. But with all that tracking, you can one, remarket, and two, you can enhance your website to convert those leads in the future.
Gotcha. And can you give me an idea of how tracking can take place? I think that there's a lot of bad optics when it comes to tracking lately in the news. How is it done kind of seamlessly and for the benefit of both the consumer and the retailer?
Yeah. So we really take advantage of Google Tags, specifically when we run Google campaigns. I know we work with your team at Punchmark setting up those global tags that makes it really easy to set up conversion actions. And typically the route that we'll take, again, it comes back to that conversion goal. Say it's purchases. We'll set up conversions for add to carts, initiate checkouts, and then actually order placed. That gives you a really good idea of one, you know, who's gauging these products, who's browsing them, who's adding them to cart, who's actually going to think about purchasing it, going to that next page, and then who's actually placing that order. So with Google Tags, I mean, we can set up tracking on all of those buttons. A really nice thing too with Google Tags is you can actually set up, so like scroll visibility or element visibility. So say someone, back to that book an appointment, say that's your conversion method. Say you want to gauge who's actually looking at the form but not actually converting. with Google Tags, you can set an element visibility. So when people see that form, it comes into view on their screen, that triggers a response. And so maybe they see it, but they bounce off. But you know that they're really interested because they got to that form. So with Google Tags, there's just so much different tracking, whether it's button clicks, whether it's form submissions, scroll visibility, page views. Google Tags has been essential to our tracking. And then kind of that goes along with that is Google Analytics, really enhancing your Google Analytics, figuring out flows, behavior flows, figuring out, you know, what page they're going to and where they're clicking next is really important to, you know, converting those leads.
Stuart, what kind of techniques are you guys using? Because I know it's rather similar, but it's kind of from a more website-based viewpoint. What are you guys doing?
We look at a number of different things. Whenever I talk to jewelry store owners, I always ask them, like, you know, what's your close rate of like 10 people walking to the store? And inevitably, they always tell me, you know, 8 or 9 out of 10 people, they can close right away. With digital marketing, with websites and e-commerce in general, you kind of got to flip those numbers. It tends to be that 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10 are the ones who are willing to reach out to you, to converse, to add to cart. What are you doing to basically keep them in that middle of the funnel to get them to either call you later or finish their transaction? So there's a number of things we look at. You know, when I look in Google Analytics at the landing page report, I can see right away that people who land on a product page or a category page are anywhere from twice as likely, 3 times as likely to actually contact you or transact, as opposed to did they start at the homepage? Homepage tends to be a lot of people just going around shopping. We also look at things like the abandoned cart rate. While not every person who adds to cart can be tracked and followed up with through like an abandoned cart email or SMS message, if they give us your email, if they add to the product to the cart, that gives us enough data to go back out to them and say, hey, come back. We'd like to talk to you. Did you have any questions? So there's a number of things both, you know, on the platform side, as well as just in analytics, in Google Ads, in, you know, if we're ever doing LinkedIn ads or Bing ads, all of those platforms have the tools and the tags we need to be able to keep people coming back to the website when they're not willing to buy or able to buy when they first visit.
Yeah. And I think what goes along with that is I think this is where I make the sales pitch for the value of brand. So what happens when you visit a website is, say, again, we're just going to use jewelry as the product in question here. So say they want a Father's Day gift and they're looking around and they are looking and they sort by brand and then they're looking and they add one to their cart. And then, you know, they decide, you know, maybe I'm not ready to pull the trigger on it yet. And then they go away. This is the difference maker on whether they come to you for that purchase, because in the end, the need to purchase this Father's Day gift is not going to go away, whether they come back to you or whether or not they are going to just search generic Father's Day gift and go to one of those landing page systems that kind of aggregate different products. And the brand is what's going to kind of tell the story and have them alert and come back and allow you to make the sale yourself. So it comes with brand and being distinguished from the crowd, as well as your follow-up and remarketing services that allow you to, again, track them. So that gives a terrible idea of tracking. I hate that. But it's like, it's when they click on one of your products and they say, you know, oh, I love this. Well, maybe they're going to be going around Facebook and allowing them to be cookied and then showing them an ad for, yeah, other great men's bracelets, and makes it so that, oh, you know, I didn't actually buy my father a Father's Day gift and it's getting really close and suddenly they're in the funnel again.
Yep. We run a lot of brand campaigns here in Punchmark for our marketing clients. And without fail, they always have an impact on somebody's business, whether it's an increased call volume, increased number of store visits, or even that, you know, add to carts or booked appointments. Brand work and associating your brand with jewelry, with events coming up, with holidays, that has a huge long tail impact on your store sales.
Yeah. Joel, when you're looking at Google Analytics, you mentioned this, Google Analytics is so over my head. I've tried getting into it. I love the flow charts. I love seeing things like where they enter and seeing whether or not they come from homepage or landing page. What can indicate that a change needs to be made? Because these people that are listening, they might go and look at their Google Analytics and they might go in and think, now everything's hunky-dory. Can you give me an idea of what might be a telltale sign of something needs to change?
Yeah, I would say there's a few metrics, few KPIs that we really look at when we are analyzing, you know, a landing page and how successful it is at driving traffic through that funnel. Average time on page, that's a big indicator if people are bouncing off right away, not spending a lot of time looking at your products.
What's a good target for that on the average time on page?
Typically, I feel like a minute to 2 minutes Gotcha. Is kind of a sweet spot that we like to see. Anything below a minute, even anything like below 30 seconds, that's when it starts to really get
something's
worrisome.
Wrong.
Yeah, because people are seeing the page, they're landing there, but they're not seeing something engaging that's getting them to stay, right? Or to click on another product to go throughout your website.
The one exception I would make to that is if it's an appointment form page, it might take somebody less than 30 seconds to fill out that appointment, then mission accomplished. Versus like a product page, you expect them to spend a little bit more time kind of looking at it and looking at the features, the benefits, whatever they're looking at on the product page.
Yeah, the browsing.
And I would say that it coincides with kind of just what we were talking about, making sure you have that tracking set up. Because if it is a low session duration, then, oh, hey, we got an appointment. So you know exactly it's coming from that and the conversion that you're trying to get, right?
Gotcha. And I've seen the idea of landing page usage. It was something that when we had our previous version of our platform, what we call Site Manager, landing pages were not a part of the buy purchase process. And it was expected that, you know, they would go in, they would visit jewelry, and then they would just kind of filter their own stuff and then go from there. I do think that there's this idea, and something I talked to people like, for example, Podium about this, was the active versus passive shopper. So active is someone who has a clear idea of what they wanted. Like, for example, the example I was using before with the men's jewelry. They need a piece of men's jewelry. They don't exactly know what it is, but they know what the end goal is. So that is someone that is kind of in the process of actively shopping, where there's a passive shopper who's just going in and they just want to spend some money. And that is where I think the landing page process comes in even better, is when people go in and they see, oh, you know, this beautiful dynamic picture of some bracelets. And then they go in and it's like, what kind of bracelets do you want? You want bangles, you want chain, you want a watch? And then going from there, and it puts them even closer, and it does it visually as opposed to verbally or written. And it's just like, I think it's so much better. So guys, that's kind of like the idea of the time on page purchasing kind of session. Now let's talk about post-purchase. So this is the final, I guess, funnel, but it's kind of the end of the funnel. So these are the people that have more than likely already purchased once. And like Client Book is always talking about, there's the difference between a customer who just goes in and buys a piece of, you know, your product. And then there's a client who is a repeat purchaser or someone who is in the cycle of your customer base. What do you see is the clear difference between getting someone that's a customer, a one-time purchaser, and a client?
Yeah, I would say, so really getting people to that client point is really interesting, right? There's many different routes you can go with keeping that touch point, that digital touch point. Once they make a purchase, you have data that you can use to further turn them into a client. Mm. And it's a matter of going about it. I think personally that what we see in the jewelry industry, emails are a great follow-up. Specifically, when people make that purchase, you're usually collecting their at least their name and email address, right? If anything. And that email marketing is one of the only direct digital touch points out there, right? You are directly getting in their inbox and speaking directly to the customer, whether you segment those lists and you're even getting more granular with the topics that you're talking about. You can get super specific. Say they bought a specific fashion piece, you know, you can segment them into that list. As soon as they made that purchase, you put them, upload them into your email list, and then you're continuously following up on similar pieces maybe that they're also interested in because they like fashion jewelry. They've already bought from you once. You've built a little trust with them. And I think that's a huge key, is the trust, right?
Absolutely.
You got a little bit of trust from them off one purchase, but it's a matter of building on that and seeing how far you can go to ultimately turn them into a client.
Absolutely, yeah.
And as you continue to build out your list of both your customers and like the one-time purchasers, over time, you'll start having all their emails, you'll start having all their phone numbers. any type of email funnel that you have in place on the email side, you should try to replicate it on the SMS side as well through a platform like ClientBook, or if it's built into your email marketing service, like with Klaviyo or something. A lot of buyers nowadays, and this varies a little bit depending on the market you're in, but if you're looking at the range of buyers out there from like 24-year-old all the way up to like, you know, my parents or even a bond beyond that, like hitting the mid-70s, you'll start seeing that SMS is one of the best ways to stay in touch with them because it has the highest open rates and the highest click-through rates. So doing things like, hey, you know, when can we schedule your free cleaning for you next week? We'd love to book your appointment over the phone. You have an anniversary coming up. Let us know how that wish list purchase went. Any number of ways you can basically keep them in your system, keep them front of mind, and reach out to them regularly is a win.
Yeah, and if you start to think about these purchases, not just as purchasers, but more as like they are attached to a human, the follow-up idea becomes a little bit more apparent. So again, Stu just mentioned the idea of following up about like a cleaning. So if you, instead of thinking, oh, they just bought this this engagement ring, well, that's nice. But in the end, they're probably going to want a cleaning before the wedding, or they're going to want a cleaning for their other jewelry or for the heirloom items that might be coming up before the wedding. Or they bought this piece of jewelry last Christmas, maybe ahead of this Christmas when there are sales going on, you hit them with something that might be relevant. So I think attaching like the idea of the human connection to the purchasing history starts to kind of illuminate the idea of follow-up a little bit easier.
Yep, which ties into the brand work ultimately too, because it's really relationship building as much as it is business development building. You're looking for those lifetime value customers. And it's great having people come in the door for that little quick $50, $100 cleaning or resizing. If you do an exceptional job with them and you stay on top of them, they might come back for that $3,000 purchase, leading to the $10,000 over their lifetime, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And I think the one part that I would like to highlight of the post-purchase kind of journey is actually the first step. So it's this confirmation email. And I've seen this done really well by some people. I've been on a real online shopping spree. It's not great, but there we are. It's for research. That's what I'm telling myself. And I see as soon as I get the purchase, as soon as I make a purchase, it doesn't matter if it's $5 or if it's for $1,000, I want a email right away and bonus points if there's a tracking number attached to it. I think that the idea of kind of get that confidence that I didn't just waste my money is just so important. And some places take it even a step further where they're just sending you constant emails. And honestly, I have like 100% open rate on all of those emails. They all come in and I open that right up every single time, whether it's about, hey, you know, your purchase is on the way. In the meantime, you want to look at these other pieces of products? I'm like, yeah, I do actually want to look because I'm excited for my new piece of product. So, man, I think that the limits are never ending for that.
Yep. I just got the best marketing email sent to me in a long time today. So I'm an iPhone person. I'm an Apple user. And I got an email right before this recording, actually, that the iPhone is now available in an off shade of green.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And I don't know why I'm excited about that, but you know, St. Patrick's Day is today. There's a green flavored iPhone now, and I'm like, I don't really need that, but I kind of do want it.
In the end, that's kind of what it's all about. Is the that's the quintessential luxury. In the end, jewelry is luxury. It's a thing that we want, but we don't necessarily have to need. But it'd be really fun if we had it. And getting you pulling on those triggers at the right moment is just what it's all about. You know that they released that. What is it called? End of life cycle, mid cycle. I think it's for the iPhone 13 or 14, whatever number we're on. It's already been out. Everybody who wanted it got it already, but now we got it in green. And now suddenly St. Patrick's Day, it's coming up and it's like, wow, that actually works. It does work.
Yep. Joel, I actually have a question for you. What are some of the segmentation things you would recommend people do to their lists after they get customers' data, they get purchasers? How would you recommend people segment and market to them in the future?
Yeah, to a couple points that you actually mentioned. So birthdays and anniversaries. I think the whole gifting idea is a great way to get those repeat customers, right? Maybe their first purchase was a self-purchase. Maybe it was a gift. But jewelry is such a common item to give for a lot of holidays. or birthdays or anniversaries, that really segmenting and taking advantage of that, those birthdays, those anniversaries, I think that could be two separate lists alone. I think fashion jewelry, I think engagement, people who have bought an engagement looking for wedding bands, and then cleaning. I think you can get really granular with all the services that you offer, really all the products, and there can definitely be overlap, right? Someone could be a part of three different lists, you know, their anniversary, birthday, fashion, maybe they just bought an engagement ring. But when you tailor that copy and that creative and that email to that specific list, you have a lot higher chance of upping that open rate and that click-through rate, because they're seeing something that they're actually interested in, right? It's intentional. We know they're interested in it. They maybe have bought something. They've shown us that they're interested in it. So let's make it intentional and make the email very specific to what they're interested in. And that segmentation really helps. If you're sending a broad email to your whole list, you'll probably get a fairly low open rate, right? If it's something that someone's not interested in. But if it's very specific, you segment them down to a very, you know, specific level, you can send specific emails and you're going to see that open rate go up, that click-through rate go up, and drive more people to your website.
One thing I want to kind of build off of with that, not only with segmentation, but just the importance of sending people directly to the product or the product category that they've expressed the most interest in, or that you know they have an interest in, but you also want to sell more of it too. So not everybody, barely anybody should ever be sent directly to the homepage of a website nowadays. It should go directly to, I'm looking for Mother's Day jewelry and here's my Mother's Day landing page. You know, I'm looking for an anniversary gift. Here's some good options. Or whatever it might be. Maybe it is somebody who's more interested in what kind of clearance, what kind of closeout merchandise do you have. Send them directly to that, as well as the items that you know you have a lot of, not just the one and done. So segmentation, sending people directly to the product and service they're most interested in, that's the win that will dramatically improve your conversion rates.
For sure. So we've now split this thing up into three different funnels, and it's all kind of one giant funnel stacked on top of itself like a snowman. So we've got pre-purchase, mid-purchase, post-purchase. We listed out probably five different or six different techniques or tools that you could be using inside of each of them. Now let's boil it down, strip it down to just one recommendation for these people to take with them, because in the end, why aren't you doing all of them? And it's like, because it's a lot of work and it takes a lot of time and it takes like a dedicated staff. And that's not available for everybody. We would love to do it all for you, or you would love to do it all. I'm sure have a pop in Instagram and emails that go out to repurchase stuff. But in the end, if you're not a multi-million dollar company that's got people on staff ready to do that, maybe that's out of the cards. Let's strip it down to just one suggested technique for each of these people. What would you guys get? I'll give you a second. While we're waiting, let's cut away to an ad and we'll come back with these guys' answers. Here we go. This episode is brought to you in part by ClientBook. Acquiring new customers is the lifeblood of your jewelry business. However, far too often, customers drop in, make a purchase, and then disappear, often for good. On the other hand, clients are different than customers. A client wants personalized offers and services, and they trust you and your salespeople for product advice. So, how do you turn a customer into a client and deliver personalized experiences when you have thousands of them? That's where ClientBook comes in. It's the mobile clienteling app built for jewelers. Here's how it works. With ClientBook, you'll never miss a follow-up or forget an important event in the lives of your clients. Birthdays, anniversaries, graduations, and more. You can send automated mass or individual messages, create customizable message templates, easily solicit reviews, and capture leads through the ClientBook web chat. ClientBook lets you send professional product images via text to a client in seconds and put together personalized wish lists and collections based on products your clients like. Discover why the world's leading jewelers use ClientBook to build long-term relationships with their clients and expand the in-store experience beyond the four walls of your store. To learn more and schedule a personalized demo for your store, visit clientbook.com/demo. Again, that's clientbook.com/demo. Thanks, and back to the show. Enough thinking. We're back with Joel and Stuart. Who wants to go first? Who's got one?
I'll go. So I would say really high level, like we said, there's so many different techniques, so many different tools out there to use. Establish what your goal and your objective is. What are you trying to lead people to, right? Without that, you could be funneling people all over your website and have no idea where they're going. You're not putting them in the right place. But if you have a goal in mind, if you have a set strategy of what you want to achieve with these customers, is it online purchases? Is it in-store traffic? Is it just general brand awareness? Do you just want to funnel people to your website? There's so many different conversion methods out there that establishing it before you do anything will enhance whatever you do, whether it's organic, paid, because you have a goal in mind and you are driving people to that, and keep it in mind, you know, throughout the whole journey, however you approach it.
Gotcha. What about you, Stuart? We got one technique that you're going to advocate for that these people start employing. What do you think it's going to be?
If we look at the mid of the funnel, once you have a sense of what people are looking for, you know, some of your sales numbers, you know, what a general customer would be, I would look at your edge data. If you have the edge, I would look at your analytics and talk to your store sale manager and make the first two items in your site navigation your top two selling products, because it is what people are looking for. And if you provide it to them right away, you'll start selling more of those. Everybody wants to have bridal or engagement number one, but those aren't really like online sales. Those are, you know, lower the funnel, like, you know, get somebody in the door. But if you're looking to increase your e-commerce and your online, put your top two products that you have in stock regularly at a good price point first and second in your navigation.
Man, that's a money little change. It's so funny. The devil's in the detail. All you got to do is you got to just play to your strengths a little bit more. And it's like, yeah, everybody wants to show, you know, everything in the kitchen sink at some point on their website. It's great. But if you're trying to move one or two things, let's get those prominent. Let's get them front and center instead of keeping it a secret. So my technique, I think, would be, I think that landing pages are money and they cost nothing to make, especially, I mean, if you're on any platform, you can just use it during using a builder of some sort. Every platform has one of those. Ours is called Page Builder. Picking from a template, throwing in, breaking down all of your root categories. So necklaces, earrings, bracelets, watches, and then breaking them into landing pages that have subcategories all in them. So for example, I've said this a million times, people that have listened to In the Loop for 77 episodes are probably like, ah, here he is again. Breaking down earrings into hoops and studs and dangles and chandeliers and all you want, crawlers, breaking them down. And I think visually is the way to go. Having the products available is great, but allowing them to shop even more granularly into getting them so that when they are presented with products at the final moment, the big reveal, you're presenting them with 30 products as opposed to 500 products, which is possible. The chances of the actual follow through way higher than if you were to do the broad stroke. So we just covered a ton of stuff. I feel like we've been going. That's about 30 minutes. I hope that you guys take those three little suggestions. So we got landing pages, we've got navigation items, and we've got conversion strategy. If you can take those little bits, I think, is it going to boost you from a 1% conversion rate to a 50% conversion rate? Probably not. But what if it goes from 1% to 2%? Well, that's an improvement and you're on your way upwards. So I really appreciate all your time. We really do. And thanks again to the Smithy Group and Punchmark for making this whole thing happen. And thank you to Joel and Stuart for joining me. We'll be back again next week, Tuesday, with more episodes. And special thanks to ClientBook for sponsoring this week's episode. Bye, everybody. See ya. Hey, thanks for listening. If you made it this far, remember to leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and try subscribing on Spotify. It really helps us grow. New episodes in your subscription box every Tuesday. Thanks again. Talk to you next week.